HealthRadio.fm. I am your host, Tammy Lynn McNabb. I have on the line with me today Susan Wiener, who is the author of an amazing new book that I was able to get in my hands and read. It's called Resilience, A Story of Courage and Triumph in the Face of Recurrent Cancer, which is so sad. But you're obviously an authority on a lot of things. You're a therapist, but you have gone down this path of having cancer twice. Tell us briefly about your story, Susan.
When I was, I had volunteered working with cancer patients from the time I was 28 years old. I had had a near-death experience at 18, and it left me feeling a little bit less fearful about death, and I knew one day I would work with people. I sort of didn't expect at the age of 36 to be faced with colon cancer myself, but as I thought about it, I kind of thought, well, why them and not me? You know, I'm not really that else. It doesn't happen to people because they're good or bad or male or female or fat or thin. So I kind of did whatever I could do to deal with it. I was frightened and terrified. All the learnings I had acquired in the past kind of went out the window. And I was a neophyte. I had to start right from the beginning. Because I didn't have any constructive experience in this field when it came to myself, I turned to my medical team. And I probably would have jumped off a bridge had they told me to jump off a bridge. I just wanted them to make me better. I wanted them to take away any of the pain, the frustration that went along with cancer. I would have liked them to take the heartache out as well as the cancer, but unfortunately, they couldn't do that. And I did a reconstruction of my colon and bowel resection, I mean, and chemotherapy. When I was finished with that, I decided that I needed to do a lot more than just traditional medicine. I found myself vulnerable and fearful. I would cry at the slightest thing. I mean, I didn't feel grounded, and I was scared because I'd never not had that feeling before. I had danced ballet till I was 27. I was disciplined and strong. And I'd had a lot of other physical issues that I just thought were structural, and I dealt with them well. But this one I didn't know how to deal with. I sort of couldn't get my head around it. So I found myself basically going back to school. I tried to learn everything and anything I could about body-mind medicine. I had a few years of visualization training. I took a three-year course to become a natural health consultant. I learned neurolinguistic programming and got a master's in that afterwards, and just kept studying and studying and studying. And then 5 years later, after having been given 95% chance to have a disease-free life and having what I thought I did to do everything right, I had lung cancer. And that was really devastating. I think that, you know, the first time around when you have cancer, you think, okay, maybe I can deal with this. And, you know, a lot of people live with cancer once, but twice is like right. One step closer to the grave. And people become very, very fearful of you. But I was given 95% chance not to have cancer again. And this time, I was given 25% chance to live 5 years. Wow. If I had lung surgery, I had a lung removed, and their recommendation was chemotherapy. And I kind of made the decision the second time around that I had enough tools in my toolkit that I was not going to do traditional medicine other than surgery. And that kind of shocked my family and my doctors and my friends. You know, people are very scared when you go out on a limb and you're kind of a pioneer trying to do what you feel is right, knowing very well that, you know, you could die.
So let's clarify that. So you had lung cancer, and they wanted to remove one entire lung, one side of your lungs.
Yeah, I had the whole right lung removed, which is 55% of your breathing capacity.
And then in turn, they wanted to do chemotherapy, and that's what you chose not to have. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. Wow. So I can see everyone saying, okay, wait a second. So it's not like you had, you know, you've been through cancer once. You've had cancer now a second time, and my mother has had lung cancer twice, and she had the kind of cancer where they could remove just the section of the lung that had mm-hmm. the tumor. But you, in turn, had more than half of your lung capacity taken away. Tell us a bit more about why you chose not to have the chemotherapy.
You know, I didn't make that choice initially because I first had to recover from the surgery, and that was probably the most difficult challenge I had ever faced and probably will ever face. It was arduous. I felt like a truck ran over me, and I could not breathe. And from being a very physically active person to becoming a person that sort of sat around like a lump and needed to sit down 5 times to climb a flight of stairs was shocking to me.
Right.
But I kind of thought, if there's no cancer in my body, and they cannot prove that there is cancer anywhere else, why on earth would I exhaust my body any more than it's already exhausted? And do chemotherapy to treat what? You know, maybe I would have felt differently had they said that there were cancer cells somewhere else in my body, and this is what they thought I needed to do so that they could measure something.
Right.
But here they couldn't measure anything. My bloods never showed anything other than being perfect right from the beginning, and here I had cancer twice, so what were they going to measure? How would I know? What would be some proof that I would actually be helped by this procedure?
And you know what, if you think about that, that's extremely logical, because in some cases they look for, they call them floaties in the x-rays, or black, you know, small black dots that they can't say is cancer, but because they don't know what it is, it has the potential to become cancer. In your case, you had everything removed. It's not like a colon cancer where you're taking out part of a colon or gone.
No, tumors in the middle of the lung, and therefore they just decided that was it. It was all coming out.
Right.
And I remember the doctor said to me, we don't know what we're going to do until we go in. And I was so grateful when I opened my eyes that he told me it was a short surgery, because that meant they removed the whole thing.
Right.
That I just thought, okay, that's the last remnants, good riddance, the cancer, goodbye, I don't want you anymore, it's gone.
So in lieu of the chemotherapy, what happened next?
I had 3 years of school in naturopathy school and 2 years of visualization before that. And I basically became my own science experiment. I decided that I was going to utilize everything I had learned. And I started really working with my mind. What were the thoughts I could tell myself? How can I reframe situations that weren't helping me? I went, you know, I mean, I did things that were not necessarily terrifically acceptable by the traditional medical community. I tried therapies where I drank my own urine. I did therapies of a therapy called 714X, which was an injection of camphor, nitrogen, and sea salts in my groin every day for 9 months. I did liquid thymus. I did pancreas. I did so many different vitamins and minerals and therapies that were from everywhere. I used a lot of hypnosis. I tried at the beginning when I first had cancer. I became a vegan, and that didn't work. So I gave that up. I hated it anyway. And I learned how to try to listen to my body, what were the needs of my body, and to just be a generally conscious eater and a conscious liver. And, you know, I came to terms with the idea of death, Tammy. I kind of thought, if I'm going to die, then I'm going to die, but I'm going to do it my way. I'm not going to do it feeling as though I'm at the beck and call of everyone else, and I'm not going to play a wait-and-see game. I remember somebody asked me, why are you doing everything at one time? How will you know what works? And I said,
right.
I don't care. I just wanted to work.
I think there's a point when, you know, when you're faced with life or death scenarios, and you, it's been multiple times, but even once, you just, some people give up, or some people really just say, what is going to happen is going to happen. I'm going to take charge and move on. But it can be empowering in a very bizarre way.
You know, people sometimes say, oh, my God, look at me now. I would never, ever want to be anything else, and cancer did this to me. I think cancer sucks, and I think it stinks.
Yeah.
But I think that what comes out of you facing such adversity and difficulties is the fact that you realize how resilient you really are, and that you find that you are so much more capable than you ever believed yourself to be. And I think life's experiences have the ability to bring that out in us. And that's the most amazing thing that comes out of facing adversity. I mean, that's amazing. You know, how many times a child falls down, and yet the child never thinks twice, except it gets up again. And I kind of feel like I'm a bit like that, but I didn't do it without a sense of purpose. It would have been romantic to think, you know, it was for my husband that I wanted to live and grow old with him. It wasn't. It was for my daughters.
Right.
They were, you know, 8, 12, and almost 14 at the time I was diagnosed, and I needed to live for them. And I remember when I had cancer the second time, my daughters would come to me, and we'd have these conversations, you know, are you going to die? And I said to them, I don't know. I just know I'm not done living yet. I can't promise you anything. If I need you, wherever you may be in the world, I'll call you back. I'm just not done yet.
Yeah.
And I really made that very, very clear to them. I mean, it was hard. It was very hard on a family. It impacts. Cancer doesn't just happen to a person. It really happens to everybody in their lives.
Most
everybody
definitely.
Becomes fearful and scared and, you know, they're not sure. And as I said, the second time, it's shocking. It's even more shocking because you don't know if you're going to live or not.
Let's talk about how the mainstream medical industry and your doctors and your the support, how did they look at you, or how did they respond to your decision to not have the chemotherapy and go down this route of natural medicine?
They were terrified. They were terrified. I had my original oncologist call me from MD Anderson in the States. I live in Montreal, you know, and just beg me. I had doctors beg me. They called my husband behind my back. You know, you have a husband barely hanging on. You've got a second diagnosis, and then you've got doctors begging you to go do something that you don't feel good about.
Right.
It was shocking for them. But, you know, more shocking for them was the fact that no matter what I may have done, at that time, they really weren't interested. And I remember collaborating with one of my doctors 16 years after I had had the second cancer, and I said to him, you know, you don't even know half of what I've done. And he told me he still thinks it's a bunch of baloney and it's bogus and it's garbage and there's no, you know, scientific evidence for anything that I did. And I said, but look at me. I'm here. And he said, well, you're a miracle. You're one of those spontaneous remissions, and you're a miracle. And I said, don't you want to know why I did what I did?
Mm-hmm.
And they really weren't that interested.
Or how I did the things
I
did. Yeah.
Or measure my blood. Watch how I'm a success. Show other people why I'm okay. You know, I remember when I had gone to a conference and I had, you know, a shift in my thoracic cavity and I stopped wheezing or whistling when I spoke. My pulmonologist said to me, you know, I don't know, something has happened here that I cannot explain. And I said to him then and there, use me. Use
mm-hmm.
me for your lung cancer patients who have trouble breathing. Use me as an example. And he said, I can't. It's outside of the scope of what I know. But if
mm-hmm.
I ever get sick, I'm coming to you.
Amazing. You know,
I had these quiet conversations with doctors who would talk to me privately, but fearful about coming out publicly and asking these questions or supporting a process that they really didn't understand.
Which is so unfortunate.
Because
it's
slowly changing because we're insisting that it change.
And it's slowly changing because there are, I think, far more cases of cancer than there ever were in the past. And I find your story, you know, interesting from a very personal standpoint, because I look at my uncle who is dealing with cancer right now, and, you know, I was able to set up for him working with a naturopath who is a medical doctor, and chose to go down the road of practicing alternative medicine. And she mm-hmm. had the most amazing care available for him. And I tell you, his doctors who were taking care of him, specifically his radiologist, was calling this lady a witch doctor, that, you know, he's risking his life with her. It was just, they scared him to the point where he chose to not accept the $25,000 worth of care through a naturopath because the mainstream doctor had scared him so much. Shocking to me.
Well, you know, it's funny because I had a client who basically went and was very, very much involved with a woman for Chinese medicine, and it was very expensive. I mean, I think this woman practically saw him on a daily basis, and he had lung cancer, and he did die. There was no question. But he lived so well up until just 2 days before he died.
Mm-hmm.
And the care he received from her allowed him to have that quality of life that I don't believe he would have had otherwise. I think that our big problem is that we seem to wear blinders, and which perspective, whatever perspective we look from, we tend to block out the possibility of anything other than that being able to make sense to us. And that's why we have different people studying different modalities of health and well-being. What we need to learn to do is to say, this doesn't feel right to me, but this aspect makes sense to me.
Right.
You know, nobody would go and say that chicken soup makes you feel better when you have a cold, but everybody seems to have a glass of orange juice or an orange or have chicken soup or vitamin C or whatever. We know that a lot of these things seem to make us feel better. We just don't understand how to collaborate. Traditional medicine says that they need scientific proof, but all of their phase one protocols and studies are all experimental. And
right.
Part of the experiment is that let's see how much it will take until we can kill you. And then we're going to adapt the amounts that we use so that we can lessen the toxicity on the person, and maybe it'll be some benefit to you. But that's an experiment, and we don't really understand it. Nobody is taking the time to study some of the other aspects of health and well-being, and maybe if they did, we'd be able to collaborate and be able to have better medicine that includes so many different forms of traditions. The Chinese learned a long time ago that, you know, certain movements and exercises and meditative practices and acupuncture and acupressure seem to be helpful to keep the body moving and to keep things flowing. And we now have a scientific study that shows that women who do yoga have had much less incidence of inflammation with regards to breast cancer when it's measured. That's the same thing of having the body moving and flowing easily so it's in better balance. I don't want to preach to the people who really aren't interested. What I'd like to do is try to find an aspect in each form of medicine that seems to make sense to all of us and allow us to open the door and use them. There have always been miracles that have happened. There have always been records that have been set. From the beginning of time, we've always heard you cannot, and yet somebody has. You know, I expanded a left lung, which is anatomically 45% of my breathing capacity, to close to 90%. And my doctor at that time said, if you were born with one lung, you could have done that. But as a woman of 41, when I had lung cancer 25 years ago, you cannot do that. It's not possible. Mm-hmm. And I just said, you know, I'm glad you didn't tell me that before, because
exactly.
I don't know that I would have tried so hard.
Exactly. Your book, I think, is a great read for so many people who are, you know, have cancer or have a family member who has cancer. It's an amazing story, and you've done so many amazing things. Your book is called Resilience, A Story of Courage and Triumph in the Face of Reoccurrent Cancer. Susan Wiener, but it's spelled W-E-N-E-R. Where can people find your book?
You could get it on Amazon.ca or on Amazon.com. They can download it. I believe it's on Kindle and in most bookstores, Barnes & Noble's in the States, and Indigo Chapters in Canada.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you.
Best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Susan.